Blog Talk Radio.
Conversation that Freemasons enjoy. So, start this morning reaching out and metaphorically giving you the grip and accepting your grip. It's a pleasure to have you here. This is the 21st day of August in 2016. This is the, oh my goodness, this is the 300th day of the year. That only leaves 132 days left, doesn't it? Does that add up? 300? No. 220th, my goodness. 220th day of the year. So we have a little bit of time left in 2016. I hope that you're getting excited about the equinox coming up, the autumnal equinox. We're in the dog days of summer for here in the northern hemisphere, and we need to, be ever mindful that the seasons will change, and that we still have moments to savor, so that the memories are there for forever. Make this significant in your efforts. We would, as a Mason, one would expect that you are trying to express the very best of your character, the very best of your nature through your behaviors, through your manner with other people. Those lost thoughts, the contrary notions that occur to you, the vitriol or the tensions, are better kept to yourself. No need to express them. We all know that they're there. And it makes it's an unpleasant audience. It makes it unpleasant for any audience to hear that. How do we become the authentic Mason, the true Mason, without being sincere in what we do, in our manner? And if we can't do that, take a step back. It's not a failure, but a strategy until we understand. No need to parrot. No need to jump in the line. The other day, I was speaking of jumping in the line. I was driving past a farm on my way to work, and I saw this fenced-in pasture and a long stream of sheep, all in single file, working its way through the opening, through the gate. And it was the most comical and revealing type of a very natural thing for a sheep to do. And of course, the illustration for the rest of us, if that's what we're doing, give our head a shake. Of course. But we have a really interesting a commentary today, and I'm hoping that's what attracted you here. It's about the teasing out the idea of reality becoming art, like art as reality, you know, reality becoming art. And perhaps I should have added "and becoming reality again." But we're going to start off the show with a little bit of the energy here, and we're going to get into some of the some of the wiser aspects of some of the wisdom that comes down to us is in Masonry that we're taught is wisdom. And how do you sift that through all of that from a lot of just interesting ideas and radical thinking? And everything is around us now. We don't have an authoritative church to tell us what we should and shouldn't read. And thank goodness for that. We are expressing our conscience, our capacity for independence, our contract, if you will, with the Creator to reason, our capacity to reason. So to start that off, what better than a little Christian McBride trio? This is something called Fried Peas, and he has Christian Sands on piano and Ulysses Owens Jr. on drums. I think you're going to enjoy it. I'm going to sit back and relax and get you top up your favorite beverage. Huh? Thank you. not to like, Christian McBride, that kind of bass, oh man, that just kicks it. Tune in, check out Christian McBride if you're inclined. Listen to jazz because it's an expression of the individual, and it's an interesting expression. And when you see different individuals coming together, you know that they've connected on some level, and that's what makes the groove. Here, I want to talk to you about something that is really quite compelling, art and reality. But before I do that, can I talk to you about quotes? Albert Einstein quotes. Is that all right? Of course it is, isn't it? Albert Einstein was one of the greatest minds of our era. And he left us with quotes that force us to think and reconsider ourselves. And here's just some quotes on education. A person who never made a mistake never tried anything new. We've heard these, haven't we? Imagination is more important than knowledge. Now, this speaks, I think, to the heart of masonry. Imagination is everything, he said. It is the preview of life's coming attractions. Intellectual growth should commence at birth and cease only at death. So when did you come to that moment where you draw a line in the sand and in your life and say, that's it, now I'm smart, now I understand? Most people say that it is the intellect which makes a great scientist. They're wrong. It is character. Only two things are infinite: universe and human stupidity. And I'm not so sure about the former. Whoa, gotta love that, eh? Little food for thought. Reality becoming art. Think about masonry as an art form of the period, and some interesting things begin to happen. Mocked and suppressed and incomplete. The history of some art forms tells more about us than we may realize. Baroque, incomprehensible in the day. Baroque was that period, it's often thought of as a period of artistic style that used exaggerated motion and clear, easily interpreted detail to produce a drama and a tension, a grandeur. Sculpture and literature and architecture and theater and music. Exaggerated, that's what we think of as that artistic period. The artistic period, hey? Incomprehensible in the day. Rococo, Rococo, sort of a late Baroque. It's less commonly late Baroque, 18th century artistic movement. This was happening before and around the period of the emergence of constitutional masonry. And it affects many aspects of art, including painting and sculpture and architecture, interior design, literature, music, theater. Rococo artists and architects used a more florid and graceful approach to the Baroque. Their style was ornate, and they used light colors and the asymmetrical designs and curves and gold. They did a lot of work on stucco. The interior decoration of Rococo rooms was designed as a total work of art, not sort of a piece stuck over there and another piece stuck over there, pictures of dead people on the walls, but and elegant ornate furniture, small sculptures, ornamental mirrors, tapestries, all complementing the architecture and the reliefs. By the end of the 18th century, Rococo was largely replaced by the neoclassical style. In 1835, the Dictionary of the French Academy stated that the word Rococo usually covers the kind of ornament, style, and design associated with Louis XV's reign and the beginning of that of Louis XVI. And it comes from the French word rocaille, a popular form of garden or interior ornamentation using shells and pebbles. And may describe the refined and fanciful style that became fashionable in parts of Europe in the 18th century. Owing to Rococo's love of shell-like curves and focus on decorative art, some critics use the term to derogatively imply that the style was frivolous and merely modish. When the term was first used in English in about 1836, it was a colloquialism meaning old-fashioned, Rococo. The style received harsh criticism and was seen by some to be superficial and in poor taste, especially when compared to neoclassicism. Despite this, it has been praised for its aesthetic qualities, and since the mid-19th century, the term has been accepted by art historians. I think this is a really interesting parallel to masonry. When I don't have these clear delineating periods. When was it? When did it emerge in a particular time or in a particular era? It's hard to pick the start point for masonry. I can't get into notions of the deity or our awareness of deity, but we need to talk about that on Masonic Effects, don't we? Yes, of course we do. But it's interesting when we start to talk about what it was more a trend than anything else, yeah? Not a start date. Here's an idea, and we're all going to have this idea on this date, and it began. Never the case. It was audacious, and it was aspiring. And this was an order that was transformative. Unlike any of the military history or the religious history that we know, and many of us were taught, there was something much more enriched and fluid going on around the atmospheres, the context of all of these events is much more compelling and reveals so much more about the development of thought and culture and freedoms and rights and privilege right up to today. Think about masonry in that way. Some of the history tells us more than we may realize. Both Baroque and Rococo, I'm just talking about around the period of the 1717, yeah? All the blending of colors and form and pleasure and work itself telling us of the naughtiness of the day that connects to us. Impressionists were scorned by the major galleries of Paris. So they made their own show, had their own display, and the rest is history. This interesting use of color to give not the detail, the realism of the artist's work, but the impression on the mind. Paint in little dabs that when you saw them from a certain standpoint blended to give us a new color experience. Impressionists were scorned. Remember, scorned. Monet, Manet. We were never so lively or interesting as our history. I mean masonry. We were never so lively or interesting. The story about masonry is a concoction using symbols, compressing the history of thought and culture into a stream of consciousness. Innuendo played a big part in the development of mystery, discovery, and genius. I don't subscribe for a second that masonry began through the Grand Lodges, the Grand Lodge movement. It is difficult to chart a Big Bang event. We're more of a trend, more of an influence, more of an environment. We became something beautiful, almost imaginary, but with all the stains removed. So we see Hogarth, Brother Hogarth, painted some cartoons of Masons in the street after a lodge meeting. Oh me, oh my, there goes that sense of indignant. We don't need to walk around with any airs. We have no airs, A-I-R-S. The Hogarth caught us drunk and disheveled and not looking our best, but, you know, there you have it. No stains. We sanitize. And even today, we have the pious amongst the pious pretending. That's more of the individual statement, people's sense of piety. Piety is always something that we've learned to question, isn't it? And why do we learn to question it? History. What are they hiding? But we became something quite beautiful and almost imaginary. So we can be forgiven for thinking that we are a pious institution. We recorded reality and produced fantasy. That is why we cannot replicate the past. That's also why that desire to replicate the past is insatiable. Masonry, like Rococo, always presented as this great enlightenment where science triumphs at a time when Carl Linnaeus classified the natural world from an age of sophistication into an era of awkwardness. Like the self-conscious period we're in the 21st century. Pre-Darwinian in the 7th, early 18th century, we were gawking at a fanciful intellectual processor. We were gawking at masonry, a product of the brooding natural man. The overall design is absolutely compelling. Was there anything left to conquer? Yeah. Absolutely. But wasn't it the last thing left to conquer? Wasn't that man's need to become conscious the ultimate? The ultimate struggle. And that rolls out as masonry. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Now, earlier in the program a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about this appetite for innovation, the appetite for new information. And I suggested at the time that that was the motivation for this body of work that has occurred over the past couple of hundred years. How do we weave together the notions of serious-minded men with ideas that are on the fringe of science and psychology? How do we reconcile that? How do we reconcile this notion of the instructions that we get, that we created, that redefined masonry? And my goodness, where in the world did we get this notion that uniformity was so critically important? Now, that's something that needs to be examined, because it seems like it's a doctrinaire approach to something that doesn't have clearly defined boundaries. It's more like we're making statements about uniformity without knowing the facts. All right. To all the geniuses out there, is there a uniform edge to the expansion of the universe? Well, if there is, you have proof of that. If there isn't, then it goes without saying that the uniqueness of Freemasonry may well be the translations in the mind of each and every single member. But for the sake of cohesiveness and for the sake of coherence, we need some order. Now, the question then is, what is the necessary order and what is excessive? For example, our history in North America is much different than that of the older nations and older cultures. 150, 175 years into their cultures, those countries, I suggest, were a mess compared to what we are today, comparatively speaking. Yes, we have come from a different period, and yes, we have advantages. So this notion of digging our heels in and arguing against the need to change is really hypocritical in a way and hard to conceive, because we have benefited so much from the innovations that have happened around us. Now, the intelligent Mason will always, always be able to selectively sieve through reality, the history, the passage of time, and find evidence that contradicts this type of statement. They will always be able to find evidence that supports the claim. In other words, they believe what they want to believe and they're intelligent enough to, quote, prove it. To say, for example, that mankind is in decline. Or one of the most interesting myths that was started years ago that's been disproven time and time again but still lingers on the lips, is that mankind, the population of the earth, is at a point where we can no longer feed it. Never was true when the theory was developed, still isn't true today, but doesn't that play well? Doesn't that play, that whole notion play well? We don't like this, these crowded conditions. So we realize that we don't have enough food to feed everybody, but it's not true. It's as true as you sitting in the morning watching the sun come up and turning around in the evening and watching the sun go down. It's an illusion. None of it's truth. But the intelligent mind is able to select and prove what it wants to prove. So what's your point? What's the point of doing that? That you have you're an intelligent person now that you've got yourself into this dilemma. How do you select what is beneficial, what is good? Oh, you have to stop and go beyond you're going to stop and do something Aristotelian. Yeah, you're going to follow Aristotle. He would have to understand the nature of that body, wouldn't he? Yes. So you're going to start to understand the nature of contrariness, of rigidity, not as if this is you against the universe. That's a little bit of an ego stretch. Pull it down to scale it down. We're just a little tiny speck. And yes, you have an opinion as legitimate as any other opinion, except how do you answer the ethical consideration? What is the ethical or right thing to think? What is the ethical or right thing to do? As masonry, as your discussions as a mason equipped you to sort through ethical dilemma? Often not. So what's the right thing to do? To believe the science? Well, there's lots of evidence that you could find to disprove every bit of science. Flat Earth Society, how do we know? Look at the, well, even though we can calculate that the horizon is an arc, the edge of a ball, that's big circumference. Well, how do we know that? How do we know that the colors being emitted by far off objects are evidence of an expansion of the universe? How do we know that? And do we accept that? How do you know that the Earth is not the center of the universe? Because it's been written down somewhere. And how do we know that what's been written down is to be taken literally or metaphorically? How do you know that to be true? Through debate and discussion, through examination, certain truths will be self-evident. Now that notion, where did you hear that? You've heard that in 1776. Hmm? The right of happiness is distinctly a Rococo notion. That sense of travel for the sake of enjoyment occurred in the 18th century. The tourist. Before that, travel was because of necessity. You were going over there to trade, or you're going over there for military conquest, or you're going over there to collect samples of insects or examine geology. You're going for some other purpose rather than for the sake of travel. Part of the Rococo was that an advantaged group of people were able to travel around to discover what was there. Now, in harshness, we can say that's remnants of colonialism. There was a great deal of suffering and poverty in the world, and that group were taking resources to do something that was not essential. Oh, well, how do we know that? How do we prove that that is the ethical position? And how do we live and live well in a world where we know that there is suffering? How do we conduct ourselves without becoming insufferable, without becoming the quintessential martyr? How do we do that without alienating ourselves from our fellow human beings? Do we live a life of suffering? Somehow that makes things different? Or do you subscribe to the notion where we work and support the very best ideas that will help the greater good, add to the greater good? So do we discover a way of eradicating the mosquito that conveys malaria? Well, hundreds of thousands of people die every year in certain parts of the world from malaria. And from some of our soldiers that came back from battle with malaria, and they know as they grow and become older men and women that it doesn't go away. The effects are there. So how do we separate out the ethic? And what does masonry do to help us with our ethical dilemmas? Well, here's a man, and we want to see somebody wrestling with this. Let's say that Albert Pike, I would talk about Albert, controversial as all get all, a beautifully realistic, naughty boy. But so what? So what? He was also a genius. He was a very bright man. If all you can do with Albert Pike is take away the threads of racism that's alleged to have been part of his writings, you need to pull your head out of the sand. This was the lawyer that stood up in Washington and argued for the rights of Indian tribes. Indian tribes that had been attacked and massacred by American troops. And one man, one Southern gentleman, went north and argued for the rights and compensation for the bands, for the historical inherited leaders. And that was Albert Pike. Now, if any of you are thinking that we're talking about an enlightened Washington, come on. You know better. To be able to send in troops, to be able to massacre this today we know as genocide. So Pike was standing on fact of history and the obligation of the Constitution. This is the man, this is a great, great human being. Now, his writings, I can't tell where he starts and the ghostwriters leave off. I just cannot, I have no idea. And I don't know if anybody else does. But it's like saying that Darwin was the first. Well, yeah, except there was somebody else the first. Or Edison was the first, except, what about Tesla? Oh, well, we had airplanes. Well, we know that's the Wright brothers. What about those French guys that were, what, a couple of years sooner? Oh. Unbelievable that what we can do to revise history. That said, we are struggling to follow something that was the product of a philosophical alchemy, if that isn't an oxymoron. It's as if the history that we have constructed somehow morphed into this notion that it was literal. How in the world did that happen? And that reinforces the notion that everything that came before us was better somehow, and therefore we need to be reenacting the past. So Freemasonry, is that what you're saying to me, that Freemasonry is one great big elaborate reenactment? Really? That's what you got from the history and philosophy and principles and ethics of Masonry, is that it's a reenactment. Really? But when we look around today, isn't it inevitable and unavoidable that we are going to notice, warts and all, the truth of Masonry? Well, are you thinking that there were no stains or warts in our days gone by? Of course there were. Oh, polite company doesn't mention that. Ah, I see. Polite company doesn't talk about the human condition. I beg your forgiveness. Polite company pretends. Yeah, I got that. But we don't live in polite company. We live in a reality where we have certain principles that help guide us because we're fallible. And that really begins to tip the floor of the lodge toward our notion of deity and religion. One of the most intriguing elements of life is belief in that awareness of deity. But we won't talk about that now. That's too uncomfortable. We need to talk about balancing this kind of conversation off with the pleasures of our company. The good food and the drink that loosens the tongue, allows us to laugh and smile, and even the fearful that don't have forgotten how to do that. Will be show a long face and point a withering finger, an accusing finger. Have lost their voice. Contemporary gentlemen are coming forward, but we're not answering their questions. We're not. We're answering our own questions. And the question we've put out there is, how do we reenact the past? Because if we're better at it, then we'll continue to thrive and grow. Well, that was never the case at all. The challenge, if we accept that living in the past, the challenge then is to be unique, interesting, innovative, and entertaining at some level. Now, how do we do that? Not hard at all. We have to keep somehow that stiffness, that desire to dress up in our braid and make speeches that nobody wants to hear on topics that make no sense at the time. But by golly, it's a legitimate opinion because of the rank of the person saying it. We've lost our sense of the common man. But don't believe me. There's a night in Tunisia, just to catch our breath here. Step back. We'll continue when to come back. This is Dizzy Gillespie, from who created Dizzy Gillespie's Club Coca-Cola in New York. Here's this from 1989. Oh, you know this. Thank you. Oh, man. Sweet, huh? Just sweet. So, Einstein was right. Most people say that it is the intellect that makes a great scientist. They are wrong. It is character. Well, if that's the case, then masonry is playing to your wheelhouse, the development of character. Learn from today, live for today, hope for tomorrow. Live from yesterday, live for today. Now, are you living for today? Now, this was interesting. We've heard this as an admonishment against going to school. Education is what remains after one has forgotten everything that you've learned in school. Well, I know about doing my maths. I know about a bit about, I can recall the botany, but that's been forgotten as I've gotten older. But education is ongoing. So Albert was right. Oh, would I have gotten this far, would any of us have gotten this far without a structured education? Come on. It's like trying to go through a jungle without a machete to help you cut the path. Yeah, you can get through it. Oh, and does doing that build character? Really? So it's a competition, is it? I don't think it is a competition. I don't think it is at all. Look deep into nature and then you will understand everything better. That's what Al said. Here's what Masonic Effects gets out of that. Look deep into your own nature. If you want to understand what's going on around, and to do that, you begin to look at the world through the eyes of your enemy. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. So what was the thinking that we used when we created the dilemma? We don't have a problem. We have the dilemma of masonry. Something is happening, and we don't understand how it's happening. We just know that it is. It's as if the intensity of the gravitational pull is fading somehow. In masonry, then, is gravity a constant? Or if it remains a constant, does that mean that there are other bodies in orbit that were quite distant and are now coming closer that have influenced masonry, and that our trends right now are neither positive nor negative? The valence is what it is, but it's part of an ongoing pulse, a pulse that started a long, long time ago within humanity. And for anybody to think that we need to scramble to try and put band-aids on this pulse, or to pretend that the pulse doesn't exist, or even in a more limited and withering way, to begin to point a finger at each other and blame and say that is the source of this pulse, is absolutely ridiculous. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. What if this is as natural as the tides and as complicated and as gentle and obvious? You're sitting on the edge of the sea and you can see the tide coming in. You don't see necessarily the orbit of the planet and the influence of the moon, We see the tide coming in, the tide goes up. As for pointing fingers, for every aspect of Masonry, we are all leaders in our own way. We are all stepping up to the challenge equally. And this notion that some are made to follow and some are made to lead, how do we know that? Because somebody has some training that convinced them of that fact? Really? People like me tend to believe this. Everybody should be respected as an individual, but no one idolized. And for all of us, life is like a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. So while there are individuals within our order who have stopped or think in their own mind that they've stopped, that life is passing them by, that their day in the sun has come and gone, that has never affected the order. No one person has ever affected the order. It's too complicated and too beautiful. A person who never made a mistake never tried anything new. So the people that think that we need order in order to be powerful, help me understand this. Peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved by understanding. What was it, 166 scientists that wrote to Truman begging him not to use the atomic bomb? But did they know that he didn't? A weak man at the switch. Eh? Anyway, we've got to sign off today. We really do need to talk about our notion of deity. We do. Not because, oh, it's big happy time. Save that part of the conversation for Masonic Effects. Here we can think a little bit. Pour yourself a tumbler of your favorite Kool-Aid. Have you drank the Kool-Aid of Masonry? Do you buy into it? Or are you still thinking it's just a sausage factory turning out links? Al said a lot of things that I really like, but I'll leave you with this one. And then we're going to tear into some Dizzy Gillespie. There are two ways to live. You can live as if nothing is a miracle, or you can live as if everything is a miracle. Thanks so much for joining me today. We're going to hear a little Terrence Blanchard. We already listened to a little Dizzy Gillespie. This is Terrence Blanchard, trumpet, and playing with the E Collective, and they're performing a piece called Prince, Diamonds and Pearls at the 2016 New Orleans Jazz Festival, just back in May. I think you'll like it. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the support. Thanks for committing those incredible, incredible, tasteful, understated Masonic acts. Whatever we do, how open we are, we always must do it with good taste. So what we know, when we pick up the rock and discover something that's not quite the way it's talked about, we still have an obligation to conduct ourselves with poise and manners. And as Confucius, this great sage, would tell us, go about our business without inconvenience to any other person. Yeah, there we go. Terrence Blanchard.
are the Coors Brewing Company.
And can't believe it did that. No, I'm going to try and fix that. Unbelievable. Do I give up? I have a hell of a time giving up. Thank you.
Thank you.